Welcome into the Locked On Knicks podcast. I'm Gavin Shaw, and today I'm going to tell you why Julius Randle's career night was not enough for the New York Knicks to get the win against the Timberwolves right now on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Puck left, now fires a three,
and he scores, and he's fouled, and done, and he makes it.
Anthony for three, bang, that one goes down.
This is all rebound, back up, off the glass, it's good, RJ Barrett.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I want to thank you for making Locked On Knicks your first listen today and every day. So wherever you do podcasts, please throw us a subscription, whether that is on your audio platform of choice or on YouTube, where you can see our smiling faces day in and day out. And be sure to hit that notifications bell so you never ever miss an episode. But who's talking to you? I am Gavin Shaw, your favorite play-by-play broadcaster's favorite play-by-play broadcaster, fresh off a trip to Glens Falls, New York, to broadcast the New York State Basketball Championship games. Those were a lot of fun and a little less heart-wrenching for me than tonight because I had no rooting interest. And normally, I'd be joined by Alex Wolf, the editor-in-chief of the Strickland, the greatest Knicks website in the whole wide world, but he has the night off, so I'm going to take you solo through a exhilarating but also back-breaking performance against the Minnesota Timberwolves for the New York Knicks as the Knicks fell at home 140 to 134. It was a game that featured a whole lot of fireworks. The Timberwolves started 10 for 10 from the field. The Knicks started 7 for 10 from the field for the Timberwolves. That was just four made shots away from tying the NBA record for the most shots made to start a basketball game without a miss. The two teams combined for 30 points in the first 3 minutes and 40 seconds of this ball game. The Knicks ended up allowing a season high 42 points in the first quarter, allowed a total of 79 in the first half, and yet we're very much in this game. After falling down by as many 17, they cut that lead all the way down to 9 at halftime. That was mostly because of Julius Randle. He had 26 points in the first half and was absolutely electric, but little did we know that the show was just getting started at that point as Randle proceeded to rip off. I'm gonna pull my notes up as I want to make sure I get this number right. He ripped off 25 points in the first 9 minutes of the third quarter. And then throughout a lot of the fourth quarter, it looked like the Knicks were going to have enough to win it down the stretch. And then Emmanuel quickly made a corner three off of a really great save from Isaiah Hartenstein. And then it was Jalen Brunson's time to shine. He got a layup off of a really smart play by Tom Thibodeau, where he basically called for a Spain pick and roll, which is a favorite for the Knicks, which is basically where you set a ball screen and then you have someone else come up from behind and set a screen on the screener's man. In that case, this was Julius Randle. Because it was Julius Randle, it was in the midst of a 57-point game. Rudy Gobert couldn't leave Randle, and then Brunson just scooted in for a layup. Then Brunson made two foul line jumpers, a turnaround from the right elbow that put the Knicks up 131 to 129. At that point, I was like, all right, we're getting the storybook ending. The Knicks are going to win the game. But that is not what happened. Minnesota went on an 8-0 run from there, and it was basically just a continuation of a lot of the same themes throughout the game, where the Knicks didn't play with enough intensity defensively, but the Knicks were also at a real size disadvantage down the stretch with Minnesota going with basically five big guys, with Kyle Anderson playing point guard. Mike Conley was out there. So four big guys plus Mike Conley. While the Knicks had Jalen Brunson and Emmanuel quickly on the floor. And then Julius Randle just completely exhausted at this point, not able to secure a rebound over Kyle Anderson. That essentially put the game away. My big takeaway from this, outside of Randle's all-time performance, which I want to get into in just a sec, was that it was one of the few nights all season the Knicks let go of the rope on either end of the floor. And tonight it was defensively. They were just sloppy. They were going under screens repeatedly. They let Torian Prince heat up to the point that he ended up finishing 8 for 8 from 3-point range. And in fact, had a historical shooting night. He became the first player in NBA history to score 30 points with 8 or more threes and over 90% shooting from the field. So that's not good, particularly that is Torian Prince. And the Knicks let the Timberwolves, missing not only their two top players, but two of the better offensive players in the league, and Karl-Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards, still score 140 points. And it was a combination of out-of-body shooting for Minnesota that even on a night where the Knicks play lackluster defense, you would probably expect this lineup to score somewhere around 115 points, maybe 120, 140. This was a once in probably every five seasons shooting performance from Minnesota. And that happens sometimes. And sometimes in the NBA, you get caught on the wrong end of that on the wrong night and you lose. But there was certainly more the Knicks could have done to affect that shot making. But what was stunning to me was that this felt like a game where the Knicks almost felt like they were too good for Minnesota and probably took them a little bit lightly with no Cat and with no Anthony Edwards. And to me, this isn't me going on a rant and saying, you know what, the Knicks, they're not good enough to do this. They don't deserve to do this. It's more so me saying it's unbelievable that this hasn't happened more often this season, particularly as the Knicks have started playing really, really well. And sure, we've had some bad losses. And I remember that the one to the Wizards that didn't end the long winning streak was, was right in the midst of them starting to play really, really well. There have been a few this year, but there have just been very few games where the Knicks underestimated an opponent. That's a credit to this entire team. It's a credit to Tom Thibodeau. And it really felt like since Josh Hart has come in here, that intensity has been ever present for the New York Knicks. But something to watch out for, because I think coming off that Denver win, this was a team that was just a little bit high on their own supply, and it came back to bite them, because in the NBA, particularly in the NBA in 2023, like even, and not that Minnesota is obviously a very good team, but without Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns, they on paper are not nearly as talented as the Knicks, but that is just the depth of this league. That Torian Prince, who's a guy who you never even really think of, who you're asked to rank every player in the NBA, probably would rank somewhere between the 200th and 250th player in the league. And the upper end of that is certainly generous. He can go 12 for 13, 8 for 8 from 3 and drop 35 on you. Mike Conley, who everyone thought was washed 2 years ago, can score 24 on you. Jalen Noel can come off the bench in 20 minutes and pour in 14 points like automatically. Naz Reid can make a running hook shot at the free throw line, on and on and on. That can happen. That can happen in this league. Hashtag this league. But yeah, Julius Randle. Wow. Once in a generation performance. And I want to talk about it in just a sec. But first, I have to remind you that the NCAA tournament is heating up right now. My bracket is unfortunately beyond busted. Hopefully yours is in better shape. But it is, whether your bracket's busted or not, the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. These new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back. If your first bet doesn't win, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to points scored and threes drained. I don't know. I would put some money down on a big Jalen Brunson performance this week. I think he's going to get a little bit of jealousy about all the attention Julius Randle's getting. I'm going to say 35 points are over for Jalen Brunson. And you can combine that with other bets. Like, let's just say a Knicks win and the Jets trading for Aaron Rodgers, because FanDuel lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That is FanDuel.com/lockdown to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. And with that, we are back on the Locked On Knicks podcast. And I want to talk about Julius Randle. 57 points in 37 minutes, a career high for Julius Randle, and behind only Bernard King and Carmelo Anthony, and tied with Richie Guerin for the greatest scoring performance in Knicks history. And look, this comes with the slight caveat that this is a season where we are seeing an unprecedented amount of 50-point games. There have been, or at least in recent NBA history, an unprecedented amount. There have been 23 this season now, and they've come from 13 different players. You can go back a decade. Me and my roommate did this earlier in the night, and you'd see 10 years ago, there was six of these. There were years where there were three 50-point performances in a year. The NBA is in a different place in terms of its scoring. I mean, there are seven guys averaging 30-plus points per game this year. This is a great stat from Ryan Russillo. In an average year, you have like one and a half, maybe two guys averaging 30 points per game. So it is easier to score in the NBA than ever before. With that caveat being said, this was outlandish from Julius Randle, an out-of-body experience that showcases just an incredible amount of skill development. I saw someone on Twitter posted a highlight video of Julius Randle in the NCAA tournament. And what flashed to me was, wow, this guy in college was just a physical marvel, like big, strong, could fly, wasn't quite Zion-esque because Zion is maybe like when he's on the court, maybe the freakiest player in the history of basketball. Like he's in that conversation in terms of his athleticism and his size. Randle was a notch below that. Randle was a freak's freak on the basketball court in terms of athletic ability and had a pretty decent skill level in college. He has transformed from that to someone who is still a probably top 15 to 20% athlete in the NBA. I'm going to say top 15 this year with his size, speed, strength combination, and combines that with being in the top 10 to 15% in terms of skill level in the NBA. And that is an extraordinary combination. That is, I will say it simply, an all NBA combination for Julius Randle. And we got, I think, the full show throughout this game. I mean, in the first half, like started off the game with a three, turnaround fader, just big time, tough shot making. But you knew it was going to be a big night when like there was this great sequence and Mitchell Robinson blocked a shot with his left hand. Jalen Brunson had a genius play where he went flying out of bounds, jumped in the air so he wouldn't be touching the ball out, and used his left hand to ricochet it off of Nikhil Alexander-Walker. And then Julius Randle just strolled down and banked in a three-pointer off of that. And you're like, all right, this is his night. Finished the first half with 26. And you're like, all right, he'll probably cool down a little. Probably we'll get to 40. We'll be like another classic, or at least what has been a classic format for Julius this year. We're scalding in the first quarter. The right game, the right night. He'll continue it into the second. And then as the game goes on, like he'll fade a little bit, maybe hit some big shots late, finish with about 42 or 44. That is not what happened. He got even hotter to start the second half. Hit another turnaround fadeaway, left baseline, pick and roll with Mitchell Robinson. And I thought that this was just a brilliant play. Didn't look to the corner until the last second. Had the whole defense going his way. The last second whips it to the corner to Jalen Brunson for three. Then a three. Then runs hard in transition for another dunk. Then another three. 10 points and one assist in the first 4 minutes of the third. Little did I know it was just getting started at this point. Turnaround jumper, same baseline. 12 points in 4 minutes. 17 points in 6 minutes. Step back at the foul line. 25 points in 9 minutes for Julius Randle. And that was unfortunately at points and you were kind of thinking, all right, is he going to go for 70? Is he going to go for 65? Cooled down just enough after sitting the first 4 minutes of the fourth quarter and just seemed pretty fatigued at that point, which is understandable that he couldn't quite get further than that. The biggest shock was, I think this was the fourth game this year where he's made 8 three-pointers, maybe the third, that he didn't pass that mark because he got there pretty early and just never really got past it. But man, oh man, I mean, this was an exclamation point on what has been just a career renaissance for Julius Randle as a Knick, but this season in particular. In terms of where to go next, I'm gonna shout out RJ Barrett, who got out to a really good start in this game. It was a little bit of a slow finish from there, but there were a couple of things that excited me. Like I loved him being the go-getter for the Knicks in this game. It's something we've seen a couple times now post All-Star break where he will put the pedal down to start games. And I think I just keep looking for spots where he gets to be the number one guy, because that obviously has been covered up a lot this year by having Jalen Brunson and having Julius Randle. It seems like he's more and more as the season goes along, finding his niche, finding those moments. Like went right at Kyle Anderson for a layup, then hit a three, then went right into Torian Prince's body to get to the line. And then in the second quarter, if you guys listen to the podcast, you know, these are the plays I always like to highlight with RJ. Driving kick into the lane to Julius Randle with the shot clock dwindling. That was in the first half of the year. That's a shot every time. That's him crashing to the lane, three guys around and throwing up a crazy floater, probably leads to a transition dunk on the other end. Now he's slowing down, taking a beat, reading the game, Again, not super complicated passes, simple passes, but those are winning plays for RJ Barrett. Another one that really stood out to me was when he got a switch on Mike Conley in the post. And I always, and Tibbs always likes to highlight when RJ has a mismatch, right? And he can take advantage of a smaller player. But a lot of times there's not really a lot of sophistication to what he does in mismatches. It's lower my shoulder, bully. And if he's able to pin someone under the rim, he'll get a layup or he'll hit a tough floater. But I think it's kind of low key just because he doesn't get that many of those opportunities. But when he does, I don't think he really maximizes them. He should be super, super efficient when he gets someone like Mike Conley on him. And a lot of times he ends up taking a bad shot because he kind of foregoes all creativity just for the sake of going at the mismatch. But this time he was just super duper patient. Faked outside, then pivoted inside and just kind of leveraged the threat of his power to use his speed to get middle on Conley and then beat the shot blocker, lefty layup, went up and in. Super easy stuff for RJ Barrett. That was great. When we come back, I want to talk Jalen Brunson because he was good. I want to talk Emmanuel Quickly, even though he didn't finish that strong. He had some really good moments in this game. Josh Hart had some good moments. I want to talk what was a disappointing night for Mitchell Robinson. I think we're actually going to do that first. That next on the Locked On Knicks podcast. All right, guys, we're back on Locked On Knicks. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for sticking with us day in and day out. I thought this was a disappointing game for Mitchell Robinson. 28 points, didn't score, only took one shot attempt, had 9 rebounds, did have 2 steals, had 2 really nice blocks, 2 turnovers, plus minus of 0, which was actually the best of anyone in the starting lineup in this game. So maybe that says if you listen to Clyde Frazier, I'm well off the mark here. But he got dominated by Rudy Gobert in this game. Gobert had 16 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, was 7-for-9 from the field, got to the foul line 5 times, only shot 2-for-5 from there. But I think the final missing piece for Mitchell Robinson in terms of his career arc, and he's someone who's been so, so good, gets taken for granted so often, even by his own teammates, and he'll let you know it sometimes, as he did earlier this week on social media. But he's had by and large a great season for the Knicks. But I've described him this way in the past, where I think he sometimes feels like the bully that's only a bully until an even bigger bully comes along, and then he cowers a little bit. And this year has been the best of his career in terms of avoiding explicitly those situations where he has stepped up in some really big matchups. Like, he's had some good moments against the Joel Embiid. I mean, the other day, I mean, got a really great contest on one of Nikola Jokic's shot. Had some great success against the guy who might be a 3-time MVP in a couple of weeks or so. But tonight against Gobert, someone early in his career, if you listen to the pod deck, then Alex and I were saying, you know, that's the ceiling. That is at least in the archetype that he is in. That is sort of the best case scenario for Mitchell Robinson. And 5 years, I think 5 years into his career at this point, the fact that there isn't, and look, to some extent, it's just not a great night for him, but I want to see some games where he goes up against the Gobert type guy and you're like, all right, he played him to a draw, or he played him close to a draw. And Gobert was just so far and away on both ends of the floor, the better player. And Mitch at times was out of control. Like, Julius was guarding Gobert, and Gobert's probably going to score, but that's not the worst matchup. And it's really never a totally terrible thing if you have Gobert going one-on-one. I mean, I remember in the World Cup, teams would switch guards onto Gobert, and teams in the playoffs switch guards onto Gobert and be like, all right, go at us, big guy, do your worst. And he rarely ever does his worst. Mitch panicked like it was Embiid that Randall was guarding, and just flew in out of nowhere and hacked him. And those plays where there's just a distinct lack of discipline still get to you. And I think for the Knicks to have playoff success, they're going to need a extremely locked in and focused Mitchell Robinson. And none of this is to say that he hasn't been that for most of this season. It's just that you need to get it pretty much every single night. Even if he doesn't have a great game every night, he has to play disciplined every night. And I just want to see him have like a high ceiling game against an all-star type big. And he couldn't quite get there tonight. In distinct contrast to that, I thought Isaiah Hartenstein was really good. Gobert got him a couple of times too. But Ihart just had some great plays in this game. Had a 65-foot dime to a streaking Josh Hart. Threw it with his offhand to hit Hart down the court. He had another one where and this is where Ihart's becoming a real weapon on the short roll. Like, it's a little different than how the Clippers used him, where he was more of just like a straight-up orchestrator from the elbow when he was on the Clippers. The Knicks recently have been using him almost more like a Draymond Green, and I think it helps a lot that, one, they have Jalen Brunson back to be the guy who almost always draws two on the pick and roll, but now that Emmanuel Quickley's become such a threat as a scorer, he was getting double teamed, especially after a hot first half a bunch, and he just kept slipping it to Ihart, and Ihart just kept taking advantage of 4-on-3s. Had one where he got to the middle of the floor, drew three defenders, kicked it out to Randle, and Minnesota's defense was so disorganized at that point that Randle just kind of cut through them like a hot knife through butter, straight to the rim for a dunk. Then he had two really nice drives to open the fourth, like just kind of bulldozing his way to the rim. That was Isaiah Hartenstein. And then this was maybe my favorite play of the game, non-Randle edition, where Emmanuel quickly drew two, slipped it to Ihart. Ihart had one dribble, spinning pass out to the right wing to Josh Hart. And the whole defense thought he was going to the right corner, but he rotated just enough on it in the air that he was able to trick the defense. And then Hart went into the middle of the lane, drew another defender, kicked it out to the left wing to RJ Barrett. And all I could think of were those YouTube videos you would watch over and over again growing up about the late, or maybe for some of you not growing up, maybe some of you at a later age, but those early 2010s San Antonio Spurs teams. Like it felt like that kind of play. And then he was the guy who got the save for Emmanuel Quickley's huge corner three. Speaking of Emmanuel Quickley, in great first half for him. Had 8 points in about 3 minutes and 40 seconds to start the second quarter. Had one play where he dribbled through three T-Wolves on a one-man fast break. And he is just, again, it is stunning where he looks like, he just looks like a mini LeBron at points sometimes in transition. Like, that is, you could not imagine him playing with this type of force when he was a rookie. It blows my mind every single time I see it. I know I say it almost every podcast now with him, but it always blows my mind when we see that from Emmanuel Quickley. He also showed off a skill he's had since his rookie year, which is verticality on defense. He got Rudy Gobert to miss with him just jumping straight up and down, which furthers my point that Mitch shouldn't have really overreacted to anything Gobert was doing when Mitch was off the ball. Had another one where Jalen Brunson was caught in the air with nowhere to go with the ball, and he just cut right towards him, got the ball, got to the rim, got middle, pump fake, baited his defender, put it up, swooshed it in. Again, the chemistry between him and Hart was just excellent. I'd love to see those two continue to get a lot of chances to run pick and roll together. Didn't end up shooting that well. It was just 6 for 16, but I thought a pretty good night for Emmanuel Quickley. Brunson, we already mentioned the shot making late. Just some concerns defensively in this one. The Knicks, this is something Benji Ritholtz pointed out on Twitter of Knicks Film School. Of course, go follow his work. The Knicks are just not really super comfortable putting Brunson at the point of attack because they think that is probably rightfully that is inviting defenses to take advantage of him and go at him and also just drain a lot of the energy. As for offense, they always try to stash him off the ball and kind of the least threatening wing guy. And tonight that didn't really work out because he had a size mismatch. Though I thought he was punished by a kind of frustrating tendency I've seen from officials a lot lately where they really just let arm bars go. Like, there was one play where McDaniels just literally just shoved him into the ground. And I think it was called a foul on Brunson. If not, it was just a no call and McDaniels scored. And to be clear, Julius Randle gets away with that a ton as well. So, and Brunson himself gets away with it a decent amount. So it's just sort of the NBA and it affects both sides, but makes it very hard for someone undersized like Brunson, nearly impossible to play defense without just getting his butt in the ground. But come postseason, you got to imagine defenses are just going to try and go at him as much as humanly possible. And then, we'll end on a positive. Shout out to Josh Hart. Took advantage of Nikhil Alexander-Walker a couple of times. It was just too big, too strong for him. Smart passing in this game. Obi had a couple good plays in this one. Also had one play, so I guess we won't end on a good note. Had one play that was emblematic of the Knicks defensive issues where he was guarding Torian Prince and Kyle Anderson was curling on a pick and roll. Isaiah Hartenstein was already there to snuff it out. And Obi just kind of inexplicably drifted off the guy who was already 4 for 4 from three. And Obi, again, while
I, like all of you, I mean, not tonight, but in general, want him to play more minutes, want him to take more of a load off of Randall, want to see him as a rim runner on offense, just want him to get a chance because I think he would really shine offensively in a role where he played more minutes. But I also sympathize with Tom Thibodeau not keeping up on the court because sometimes he has some real brain farts. And tonight, we can call it that. One big brain fart for the Knicks, one out-of-body performance for Minnesota, and an all-time game for Julius Randle. That was not enough. The Knicks are back in action, though, on Wednesday, and Alex and I will have you covered then. But until then, I'm Gavin Shaw. This is Locked On Knicks. We'll talk to you soon. Peace out.